All rise.
All rise.
The Honorable Chief Justice and
Associate Justices of the Supreme Court
of the State of North Carolina.
Yes, oh yes, oh yes. The Supreme Court of North Carolina.
All of our citizens across the state depend upon us to uphold and protect both the spirit and the letter of the law, and to always apply the law fairly and impartially to every litigant who comes before this court.
God save the state and this honorable court.
Hello and welcome to All Things Judicial, a podcast of the North Carolina Judicial Branch. I'm Chris Mears with the Judicial Branch Communications Office. In today's episode, we feature an excerpt of an interview with Roy W. Davis, Jr., who served as a Buncombe County attorney for almost 55 years. Davis held many prestigious positions in the legal community, such as President and Vice President of the North Carolina Bar Association, President of the 28th Judicial District Bar, and member of the North Carolina Board of Law Examiners. This 2009 interview was conducted by attorney Philip J. Smith as part of the Chief Justice's Commission on Professionalism's historical video series. Smith speaks first in the interview.
Why did you choose to enter the legal profession, Roy?
Well, I had no other choice, actually. My life really has not been a case of having a clear call as a youth to foresee exactly what I was going to do. So I was at Davidson, got a good education. I could quote Shakespeare, but I couldn't do anything anybody would pay for. So it looked like I had to do something else. And of course, a lot of guys at Davidson were going on to grad school, med school, law school, otherwise. So, you know, there you are, you're a senior, what the hell are you going to do? So we look around. I concentrated in humanities, avoided science, avoided math. Pretty good record in humanities, though. That certainly fit with law school. So we looked around, and among the law schools that were good, clearly Carolina was the most attractive financially. So that my dad made that decision. He decided where I'd go. But anyway, that led me to law school and the discipline there, and then beyond.
Well, now, wasn't your dad an attorney?
My dad was a lawyer. And of course, I was acquainted with the entire bar. This is McDowell County, or as it's stated by the natives, McDowell County. McDowell County had a small bar, but a very rich fellowship, a lot of collegiality. And I was aware of that and observed it. So it did influence, I guess. I'd seen that pattern, and it was fairly close to me, and it fit my undergraduate education.
Did you first start your practice in Marion?
I came back from law school and practiced about 6 months and went in the Army. Then I came back and stayed a little less than a year before moving to what is now known as the Van Winkle Law Firm. When I first came, we had an office on the second floor of a building. Everybody stayed there, and then there was the attic above, and they had constructed a office of sorts, about 8x8, you know, in the
stairwell,
and in the attic. Jim Richmond was another associate just before me to coming to this firm, which incidentally had six lawyers and was known among the Buncombe County Bar as We the People, because they were larger at six or seven than anybody else here. But anyway, Jim Richmond and I were assigned to that, you know, outer fringes of the firm up in that office. So I didn't get an office when I came. They offered me a salary, which was considerably more than I was making in Marion. But it wasn't too grand. And the thing about it is they let it run year after year after year. and was never considering an advancement in pay or advancement in my status in the firm. I remember my O.E. Starnes, you know, who's been, who's still here, of course, but was my senior and who really hired me. Well, at the end of 1 year, I came in and asked him if he'd get a bonus. The dadgum guy gave me $100 out of his pocket and said, go away. So it wasn't, you know, I wasn't overpaid. And after all, I only had a wife and three children and with another one on the way, but no medical benefits at all and $600 a month. It could have been better. But it's worked out over time that it's been a pleasant place to be.
Well, were there attorneys in Asheville that you looked up to and thought provided a good example for you?
Frank Ferguson, a very colorful Waynesville lawyer, was a mentor. In fact, I was over there in Waynesville at some kind of session, bunch of lawyers scheduling the case, no judge, and we're all talking about this, that, and the other, and I'm talking big. I'm apparently doing a good bit of talking, and Ferguson was a part of it. And after the meeting, Ferguson came to me and said, son, I want you to remember this. You ain't learning much when you're doing all the talking. So those were words of wisdom and from Frank Ferguson.
How did you get involved with the State Bar, with Collins State Bar?
I'd been in practice 6-7 years, and I was happily working my profession there. And one day, H. Kenneth Lee turned up in my office, and he said, Davis, our counselor to the State Bar Council has just died, and I'm gonna elect you to that job. And I said, you know, counsel of the State Bar, what the hell is that? You know, I'm not too integrated with that. I don't have ambitions in that direction. I haven't participated. Maybe I wasn't quite that ignorant, but it was shocking to me. He came on two grounds. Number one, we're talking about the State Bar Council, and number two, he's already elected me. So he called some session of the local, I think there were two bars. There was the informal bar, the Buncombe County Bar Association in the 29th Judicial District. So he called a meeting of the 29th Judicial District. About a half a dozen people came, and I was elected to the State Bar Council. Not too much professionalism there, but that may have been the most significant development in my professional life, to get onto the State Bar Council. But maybe that's a long enough answer for that one.
Well, but why were you interested, as you got involved with the State Bar, why did that become of interest to you?
Well, the collegiality, I was participating in the Bar Association. The collegiality of it interested me. And then, you know, I always thought that, you know, it would be that you ought to try to make an example. You ought to try to do it right. You ought to try to live to the standards of the profession at its best, and that fit in pretty well. Of course, that's essentially the State Bar objective. State Bar exists to discipline lawyers or set standards and try to encourage professionalism and encourage the high-minded practice of law, so that fit in pretty well. And listen, you're dealing with a great bunch of guys. They're from all over the state of North Carolina. And if they got on the council, I mean, they had something going for them. I mean, they had gifts to get into that position. So in that context, you see, you get what, a host of mentors in that context. And then you begin to see how it works. You begin to see the machine, you begin to see the developments, and understand maybe how, to some degree, you can influence events. But anyway, the whole thing that my dad was always interested in the organized bar, it just seemed to fit. I mean, that's better for me than maybe other forms of volunteerism. But plus, it was a fairly consuming thing. But that really changed my outlook, changed my, gave me great opportunities I'd never have had but for that.
Roy, can you tell me what PISCA Legal Services is?
The purpose is to, in effect, it's a legal aid society which is rendering service to the indigent. And so this one was set up and became a part of that statewide group.
Well, PISCA Legal Services provides legal services to the needy. Why were you interested in that?
Phil, it's the same old story. You know, it was there and the opportunity arose, so it seemed interesting and worthwhile. And I guess there's a lot of satisfaction. Doesn't everybody have satisfaction out of participating in an organization, the board or the leadership? And it does, I mean, the state bar gave me huge satisfactions that I never gathered just from trying lawsuits or from carrying out typical legal services. I mean, it makes you feel a little better about things, about yourself, to be engaged in some worthwhile project other than just pure practicing law.
You've been practicing in excess of 50 years, is that right?
Well, it depends on whether you count my legal, my military service.
Right.
55, that adds up to a little more than 50. I finished in 55, law school in 55.
Roy, in 1993, you published a paper on the pursuit of professionalism. And can you tell us a little bit about that?
Yeah, I wrote what I believe to be pretty well the definitive statement on the subject. The profession apparently didn't agree. But that seems to me the what professionalism means in its most essential terms, in its most unique terms, is the competence and independence. I mean, you mean lawyers have to stand up against, you know, even the government itself sometimes in the public interest. And that's practice. You see, the practice of law inherently is there. I mean, you are at least for trial lawyers, you're making the justice system work. That's a heavy responsibility. Indeed, one that justifies the monopoly, in effect, that lawyers have to in the courts, that they promote that system and do it right. So, to me, that's professionalism. That you're solving problems and you're assisting the administration of justice, and to be specific, the justice system. So that's in the public interest if you do it right.
Well, you've also chaired the Ethics Committee of Bar, State Bar. Could you tell us a little bit about what you think, where people, attorneys get into trouble in terms of being less than professional?
The Grievance Committee is the one that would have really dealt with allegations of misconduct. The Ethics Committee is sort of answering questions that come in from the lawyers. But your question is about what ethical concerns exist. I know, see, you always have the example of some few lawyers are just going to flat out steal. Well, that's a huge ethical problem and not a difficult one to solve in terms of what's right. Anyway, that's certainly a deeply troubling factor. I'm not one who subscribes to the that things are really going to hell. And it seemed to me the same problems existed when I came to the bar exist today. Things are different. They're compounded, perhaps, because the bar is hugely larger now than it was when I came.
We'll be right back.
Hey, Susan! Great to see you. Shopping for coffee?
Hey, Sharon. Yeah, work's been really draining, and I need extra caffeine just to get motivated to finish the day.
Well, you should really consider applying to work with me in the judicial branch. I know we're hiring for positions down at the courthouse.
Really? Huh. I never really thought about a career with the courts.
Well, you should. I love my job. I work 8 to 5, Monday through Friday, and I have generous paid vacation and sick leave. plus 12 paid holidays a year.
No way. Do you have medical coverage too?
I sure do. I have medical coverage, a retirement plan, and flexible benefits that include vision and dental, among other benefits. And they trained me on what I needed to do.
Wow, that really does sound like a great job. Where can I learn more?
You can go to nccourts.gov/careers and view any current vacancies.
Great, I'm going to check it out tonight.
Don't wait any longer to start a rewarding career with the Judicial Branch. We have positions available in all 100 North Carolina counties. Do your career justice and apply today. Visit nccourts.gov/careers to learn more.
We now return to a 2009 interview with Buncombe County Attorney Roy W. Davis, Jr. In this segment, Davis reflects on the changes in the practice of law over his 55-year career.
Roy, how is the practice of law different today than it was when you first started?
Well, when I came, there were about 3,000 lawyers in the state. What are there now? 24,000 or so? And it's still, they say, I'm not sure this is still true, but they say that the lawyer to general population ratio in North Carolina is more favorable to lawyers than it is in any other state. Boy, they must have... They must have plenty of practitioners over in Tennessee and South Carolina and Virginia, because it seems to me that that the growth has just been unexpected. Now we got two more law schools, what, seven law schools in North Carolina? And there were only 1,137 people took the bar in the last July test. So that's growing. And I think that creates the problems. And I think also the idea of mega firms, firms that cover practice in several states, even firms that cover practice internationally, that's going to be a huge strain on the norms that you've applied in a simpler situation. So I think the growth in the number of lawyers, the growth in the areas that they practice, and the practice, I think, has become more sophisticated. It was basically trial by ambush. Are we permitted another homespun story on that subject?
Absolutely. The more homespun,
well, anyway, the first case I ever tried with my dad down there in Marion after I got out of the Army was, it would have to be this way. It was alienation of affections. I worked myself to death to prove that the wife had given birth at a time when the husband could not have possibly been the father. Got that proved. I thought I'd prove my case. So the client takes the stand. The guy who lost the affections of his wife took the stand. And speaking of ambush, the other lawyer, he must have had at least a portfolio of documents, letters, and other things signed by my client to one of his other girlfriends with whom he was having an affair. So that was the end of that lawsuit. But anyway, it was trial by ambush in those days. But now you've got discovery, to much more complex nowadays. But that's and the diversity is an example of things that have changed. That women lawyers, many of the women lawyers, black lawyers, and they are respected. And they're respected by the bar organizations, which I would say in my early days was not always the case. So in terms of recognizing people and treating them fair and equal, I'd say we are worlds better today than we used to be.
What you're presently still grading bar exams, are you not?
Only 1,137, and that only counts the July exam. They probably pick up about 500 in the February exam too.
And how long have you been doing that?
I don't know, 6 years, something like that, mm-hmm. 5 or 6 years.
And of course, As we talked about, you've been practicing quite a long time. What motivates you to continue to offer your services to the bar?
Mm-hmm. Wasn't that the same story, you know? The next avenue, next avenue hasn't opened up. Plus, I got this theory that some, you know, we all have different talents. And some people have a talent for retirement. You know, they can slip out at 65 and pretty soon they're out at the cliffs playing golf and, you know, and having a wonderful time and enjoy that. But then I think others don't necessarily have quite that gift. And so it seems to me that they ought to be, you know, hopefully the time, the line is drawn when competence is not there. But that if you don't have that talent, then why the heck shouldn't you be allowed to keep on doing what you know how to do? And I appreciate you, Phil, and the others here who haven't changed the locks yet on me.
Well, you have mentored a number of lawyers, yours truly included. What advice would you have for some of the young lawyers today that are coming along?
Well, I think if they're through law school and pass the bar, hopefully they know that they want to be a part of this profession, of this fellowship, of this collegiality, it would be helpful to get into the organized bar and do things like that. But basically, I guess I don't have any unique advice. It's just the same advice I'd give you today.
Well, I think that what something you and I have had over many years is the willingness to come talk with each other about issues and problems that might arise, whether they be ethical, professional, or just a mundane little case.
Uniform Commercial Code.
Right, or the Uniform Commercial Code.
Yeah.
But do you view that? I mean, obviously that's a little bit about what you've been talking about, but don't you think that's a pretty significant advantage to folks that you're willing to at least go to somebody you know, a colleague, and talk with them about issues?
Yes, and not just within the firm, it's been a great deal, but not just in the firm. I think you ought to have a network. Right. And you see, that's why the get acquainted with the state bar across the state is important, because I've got a number of people I can call. I got another homespun toy, if you want it here. I was over there in Murphy in a motel spending the night, ready to go into East Tennessee and take a deposition of some doctor over there. And about that time, I'd had somebody checking on him. And they told me, and they had informed me about that this guy was accused of lying or something. I mean, he really had done something awful. And I'm going to go over there, and we're going to take that deposition of the doctor. And he's down in federal court in Chattanooga. He's before the court in Chattanooga, not in person, but there's charges, and he's got a lawyer in that connection. And I was concerned about. Well, I'm going to go over there and blister him with what I know, and it's going to blow him apart. The testimony is not going to be worth a penny with that knowledge, and he doesn't have his lawyer there. Well, can I launch into it? I hope I didn't make the wrong decision, but I called up Bill Davis at 9 or 10 o'clock at night, talked it over with him, and his thought was that that he could have his lawyer there if he wanted him, but this is a matter totally unrelated to the criminal charges in Chattanooga. And we talked it over there, me in the motel in Murphy, and he in Winston-Salem at home, and we decided what to do, and next way we did it. In the course of the deposition, the doctor got up and ordered me out of the office, and it was on tape. It was absolutely, just ruined his credibility.
Roy, do you see a change in the involvement of attorneys in the community with community involvement? Or I realize some individuals suggest that because of the billable hours, particularly in the civil side, that there is more emphasis on doing work as opposed to getting out and being involved in the community as a whole. Do you see that trend, at least in Asheville?
Well, I think it's true, maybe more in other places than in Asheville. It's true that there's a heavy emphasis on making money. I mean, I might say maybe that's a drifting phenomenon that's not good.
Right.
But I think that's true. But I don't know that I've seen a diminution in lawyers participating in community affairs. Of course, we got a lot of lawyers. Maybe you could stack it up statistically some way that we're not all doing too much. But my feeling is the lawyers are pretty doggone good about getting out there and helping with volunteer matters. And that whole Pensacola Legal Services thing, not only do they have staff attorneys, but they have oodles of lawyers that are volunteering to render pro bono services.
Roy, what are the changes that you see in the profession that could enhance professionalism?
Well, you've got Mel Wright and the Chief Justice and the professionalism program. But you know, the truth is, I think the organized bar, all of the major organized bars promote professionalism. When I was president of the state bar, we were talking professionalism. We had a committee on professionalism. Ethics or professionalism is a part of, I believe that's typically a part of any major CLE program. But I guess the truth is the most assuring thing about professionalism is that you have people that are respected and practice it. I think the example you or others might give is maybe the most important thing.
Thank you for listening to All Things Judicial, a podcast of the North Carolina Judicial Branch. You can find out more about the Judicial Branch by visiting nccourts.gov.